Hi.
Hey. What's up? It's Fumi.
And it's Mike.
We just wanted to make a quick announcement about our upcoming live podcast recording show that is coming up on January 25th. 9:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. at the People's Improv Theater. Just go to thepit-nyc.com for tickets, or go to asian.asianpod.com for tickets, and there's a link that links you to the fucking Pit, the Pit website. So we hope to see you there. It's a big theater, so we want to fill it out, and we want to make sure all of our NYC anals come out to the show.
That's January 25th at 9:30 p.m.
See you there.
Bye.
The Asian Avengers, so weak.
The Asian Avengers, so weak, so fuckable, bro. You know? Whoa. There's five Asian guys together.
Together. Did you ever go through a stealing phase?
Do I think everyone should have a gun? Maybe.
Or you can look me up. I don't care. I'll fight you. I don't care.
You want to get high as fuck? You like opium?
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Asian Not Asian Podcast, a podcast where two Asian guys not from Asia talk about American issues no American cares about. I'm your host, Fumi Abe.
And I'm Mike Nguyen.
Quick shout out to our network listening party and Canal Street Radio. Check out those guys on Instagram at Listening Party Presents and at Canal Street Market. If you're listening to this on your phones right now, please take a screenshot and post that shit on Instagram stories. Tag us at Asian Not Asian Pod and write these exact words. If you care about me, you would subscribe to this podcast. Thank you. And also, if you're an iTunes listener, leave a review. That always helps. It's been a while, but I saw you last week.
We saw each other last week. We haven't been in here in a while.
Right.
In the studio.
By the time the Anos listen to this episode, they have just heard two episodes where you're not in it.
Oh.
So they probably miss you right now. So why don't you say something?
Oh. Hello.
Okay. And I was like, hey, we miss you, Mike. Where you been?
Oh, I don't do well with emotional things like that. So. But, you know, I missed you guys too.
That was so insincere. But that's okay. That's okay. Because today we're going to be talking about a very unemotional thing.
Oh, yeah.
Today we're talking about capitalism part two.
Ooh.
We talked about it a little bit with Fariha. But there's more I gotta say about it.
There is, and we'll try to talk about it in like a
fun way.
Through art.
And I don't, we're not gonna talk about economics. Maybe a little bit, but this is not gonna be like a lecture. This is just like Kinesis. You cannot talk right now. You have not been introduced. Now I gotta bleep it out.
Sorry.
I'm gonna bleep it out and be like, she just called us Ching Chong.
No, I didn't. fucking dare.
The more you talk, the more Ching Chong we're gonna put in there.
Yeah, we just just say something.
It's amazing what you can do with After Effects now. So yeah. we'll change your voice up. We'll have you
damn
say
it
all sorts of stuff. What did you just say about
so
my
many,
penis?
So oh many racial slurs happening at the top of this podcast.
No, but, you did. Yeah, so you have a fun joke.
A fun joke. I just did the show with our guest. We'll talk about that later. But I did a show called 51st Jokes, which is a show that happens once a year at the Bell House in Brooklyn, which we want to do our live podcast there at some point.
One day, yeah.
It's amazing. If you pack it out, it's fucking amazing.
I'm sure.
But it's like a big space in Brooklyn. It's very cool. And the premise is 50 comedians go up and they tell like a new joke that they wrote in 2020 is the premise. A lot of people just tell like a newer joke or whatever.
Right.
And everybody gets like 1 or 2 minutes. It's a fun time. And you know, the Park Slope crowd is like that rich, like NPR crowd. So like that's something you got to deal with. But I've been doing this joke recently about intergenerational wealth. And like it started out off as a tweet. I'm not going to like do the bit, but basically like the tweet was something like, if I meet one more person in New York who doesn't have to pay for rent because their parents pay for everything, I'm going to have to sit my parents and have a conversation with them about where their careers went wrong.
Right? Yeah.
So
I'm
playing on the idea of like immigrant parents always being like, you know, like you, why aren't you a doctor?
Why aren't you rich?
Blah, blah, blah. But then I look at my rich.
Around, why aren't you rich?
Right. Because I look at my rich white friends or whatever. And they're because you're not rich. That's why I'm not rich. Right.
It's so good because it's both an Asian joke. Right, yeah. About like, you know, why, you know, because like
immigrant joke,
an Asian immigrant joke, and it's also a capitalism joke.
Yes.
So it's like you're getting two things at the same time.
Yes.
But, you know, it's cool. But you say that maybe.
So I've been doing it. It's like one of my favorite jokes right now, and I'm like adding on to it.
Yeah.
But it's funny because some people don't get it. And so that joke either does really well or I bomb.
Interesting.
And it's interesting when I bomb because I can see that it's not that they weren't paying attention. It's just that I can see people. They understand it, but they don't know why it's funny. And I've felt like when I do shows in front of like, I guess like rich young people ish, you know, like kind of like yuppie vibes, they don't always get it. And then when I do it in front of like, if I do like a show full of like POCs, they get it because a lot of them like they may have immigrant parents or they don't get handouts, right? Like we always talk about this, like Asian people and non-Asian people, people of color, we don't fucking get. handouts. Our parents usually don't give us a house or whatever.
Yeah.
So they get it, but it's like the that's like a very interesting thing in comedy, is like the social science aspect of it. You know? And it just got me thinking. You know, I think as you get older, and again, I'm very stupid, so I'm not trying to flex here, but I feel like as you get older, you start to see like the matrix of the world and how shit works. You know,
all the ones and zeros.
And, you know, it starts off with like, okay, they don't get the joke. They don't know why it's funny. Maybe because they are the people I'm making fun of. They are the people who their parents pay for their rent, or their parents still pay for a lot of their finances because they only make $25,000 a year being an agent or whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you think about these people and they just live such a different life. Like, I was thinking about, like, there's a girl that I work with. Her name, I can't say her name, but she basically got like a autoimmune disease or something like that while she was working at my company. And, you know, she had to run like so many different blood tests, which is like so expensive, even if you have insurance. And basically what happened is her mom is a doctor, like a rich doctor from Westchester. And her mom just like did all the tests for her. And they spent like an entire year trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Sorry, what was wrong with her? And they figured it out. Yeah. And meanwhile, while she was figuring that out, she was doing like very little work at her company and her bosses were getting very frustrated.
Yeah.
And she was still making $90,000 a year.
Right.
So it's like she's making money being sick and like kind of figuring out what's wrong with this, like with her body. And I was just thinking like, oh, what if Mike was in the situation?
Yeah.
What if I was in the situation? We would die.
We would just die.
We would for sure die because we don't have the resources.
We'd
to,
also
like,
go bankrupt first.
Yes.
And then
yes.
die.
I mean, how many times do you hear stories about like an old wife trying to save her husband from cancer and he dies and now she has no money.
Yeah, she has the money.
Right?
And she's in debt.
It's like, you see, there's just so much fucking money in New York.
Oh, so much money.
And it's like, I don't even want to use the word infuriating. It's just like, I feel so powerless against it sometimes. You know?
I have a similar story of this place I used to work at. And there'd be like my coworkers. They would just be, you know, they would be doing well, but they just had this level of like, they accepted that the world was a certain way. So, okay, well, for example, whenever one of them would talk about horseback riding,
yeah,
I was just like, oh shit, this is like a whole other thing. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
I get
to go on these trips and I deserve this kind of time off.
Yeah.
And I expect I should be able to expense this and that. And you know what? I work really hard and therefore I am, you know, and they do work hard and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they're very smart. Not saying any of those things aren't true, but they also expect they grew up with a level of like, this is the way the world works because I grew up with this kind of, I don't want to say privileges, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But this is just my lifestyle.
Yes, yes.
Anything below that, they don't even consider. It's not even like a thing.
Yeah.
It's like they wouldn't.
Why aren't there horses at this office?
Why wouldn't I have a horseback?
Yeah.
Oh my
gosh! Yeah.
One time, my horse, we had to rent a saddle. You know, like, or whatever it is. And it ends up permeating a lot of the way they kind of view the world and like, you know, the sort of respect they sort of expect to have.
But going back
to the joke that you have, I think sometimes it might not work on people because they haven't connected the dots.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, what does my parents' wealth have to do with me, even if they are paying for stuff?
Yeah.
Even on a very shitty, like small, like level. Like I remember when I graduated from college, I was like, okay, I'm going to get an apartment now. And I graduated from college and I found an apartment and it was like $600 a month, let's just say. And I went up to my mom and I was like, hey mom, I found this apartment for $600 a month. And my mom was like, cool. How are you going to pay for that? And it dawned on me that
what?
I was like, my mom had been paying for my, you know, dorms and school everything with a loan. But like, you know what I'm saying? She doesn't have any more loan money. And I was like, oh my God. And now I have to go home, right? I have to, which I did. I didn't rent the apartment. And so it's just like, doesn't dawn on you because you've been taken care of for so long. You know, like the money is just like, oh, well, this is just, of course, I'm the son of my dad. Of course, that dad's going to take care of me, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. I don't know.
It's like, I have like a new definition, or like, I don't know, just like the word poor means something different to me now. It's more than just like I'm homeless. It's a much wider spectrum, right?
Yeah,
it's like if you're not in that horse or above socioeconomic thing. Yeah. If you can't afford a horse, then like to them, you are very poor.
It's what everybody was talking about. It's about wealth, not just money.
A lot of people make money.
Money is like okay, but you know, money just disappears.
So. Yeah. So hopefully we can get into this today. And you know, speaking of poor people, we got our guest today, and you know. Yo, hey. You gonna call me Ching Chong? I'm gonna call you poor.
Hey.
Okay. When have I ever? Don't add that shit.
I'm gonna bleep it earlier. And I'm gonna turn my anals against you.
Oh my gosh.
Talk into the mic, please.
I'm talking into the mic. Okay, hello.
Okay, we have a stand-up comedian from Brooklyn. She has a podcast called Love About Town. Hey, she's been on this podcast before. Give it up for Kenise Mobley.
Hello.
Yay.
Hi.
Thank you.
And
for
I am moderately. I'm not rich, so I am poor.
Yeah. For sure. You don't have wealth.
I don't have wealth.
Wealth. That's a lot of different. Yeah.
I mean, how are poor. So? This is, you know, this is our friend David Nguyen's joke. But how are you doing financially?
Yeah.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. So last year I was working for a startup. The startup was purchased by a major corporation that I cannot name, and I didn't really want to work for that major corporation, and my team was doing less and less, and so I quit my job. Mm. They gave me a small severance. So I didn't work all summer, and I
yes,
yeah,
I you were so happy.
Yes,
you were glowing. Yeah. That's the thing about unemployment. Sometimes people are like, "Oh, I'm so sorry," but that's not always the reaction.
No,
you should give them,
you know? No.
Congratulations.
Sometimes
it's awesome. Yeah.
It's like getting divorced.
Yes, this thing that was weighing around my neck, which society says I should have, I no longer have it, and I feel free. Yes.
Did you? You don't have to give too much detail, but was it like a severance that you could live on for a long time?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
And also, that's part of it. So we're talking about like if you're not rich, you're poor, and like capitalism. It's so interesting because sometimes when you critique capitalism, the first response is to be like, well, you buy things, and that's commerce. That's a completely separate thing. Mm. So it's really frustrating when they're like, we can't do socialism, we can't do communism, we can't do these things because how would I buy things? And it's like you still, no one's.
Yeah, people think everything is going to be like rations.
The only way to do this is to be handed things from the government. But it's, I bring all that up to say, like, it's crazy when the company sold, like, the discrepancy between, like, what some employees got versus what other employees got.
Oh, for sure.
Someone got, I want to say $9 million.
Oh, shit.
Whereas, from the sale, I got $3,000. It's a thing where it's not just that these two amounts aren't equal, which this person is one of the starters of the company. I understand why he makes more, but to make that
much
wide
more.
Of a gap more.
Yeah, that is, let's see here, thousands, ten thousands, hundred thousands. That is three orders of magnitude more.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about orders of magnitude, which people is different from like three times. It's
yes.
Three orders of magnitude
yes.
more than.
Yes.
And then, did this person work three orders of magnitude more than you?
Which means they would have
to work 400,000 hours a week.
Yes.
Or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
That's
so
crazy,
it's like,
right?
Okay, let's.
It's
I'm
all
not.
About
it
that.
Does not. I'm not saying everyone needs to be paid the same and there should be no incentive to work hard. That's clearly not what I am saying. But the idea that we are valuing some people's labor at three orders, four orders, five orders of magnitude
over other
people is insane, and it creates a system that is unstable.
Yeah, it's all about like equity. It's all about ownership of stuff.
Yeah,
like you got to own something, and then because like you know, I always think about there is that stupid thing where you know, like if Bill Gates stopped and saw like a $100 bill and picked it up, you know, he would lose money or something, right? Because it would take him like 2 seconds, and he actually makes like $500,000.
Ew! What the fuck is that?
Who made that calculation?
That's true, probably.
But
he's not losing money by picking
that's what I'm saying. So Bill Gates doesn't make money because he's not at like the money crank machine.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He has something that makes money for him.
And that's how
he makes money.
Right.
Any one of us, like sure, we could all like make, you know, we go to work and we crank the money machine and like money comes at us.
Yeah.
But if that money has to go to, you know, fucking whatever, avocado toast or whatever it is us millennials like, but we don't have ownership of them. It's better to own the money cranking machine.
Yes.
Just own the money cranking machine and have somebody else crank the money for you.
Yes.
Econ 101 with Mike Nguyen.
Boom.
Okay. We're good friends because we get along, but also because you, this is the theme with all my comedy friends, is like all my comedy friends have either have or have at one point had a a stable job, and
yes,
they know what it's like to like hustle in New York, like for money and chase their dream.
Yes,
it's not mutually exclusive,
right?
And you know, a lot of people are like, "Can't have a plan B, bro." But like, no, I don't always believe in that.
Okay? I've been poor. I, and not just poor in the like, I'm not one of the rich people, but I've been poor. Like, I guess I don't eat meat now because I can't afford meat now. So like, I'm a vegetarian based on price point.
Yeah.
Like, that's the level of poor I've been in my life.
Yeah, yeah. I'm an accidental vegetarian.
Yes,
yeah.
Where it's like, well, I'm at the grocery store and I'm wait, like, no. So
yeah. Somebody's like, well, are you doing intermittent fasting?
Yeah, technically, I just went to bed and I didn't eat. So. Yeah, like I've been that level.
Yo, what do you think about when you meet comics and other people who are like, not to shit on these people, but
I'm gonna shit on them,
right? But you know, but in New York, not just comedians in New York, you do meet a lot of people I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
The people I'm kind of making fun of in this joke.
Yes, you meet a ton of people who their parents bought them an apartment.
Yeah, bought them, not rent them.
They had the means to upfront give someone cash to buy an apartment.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's even if you're a comedian who. You know, it's tough for sure if you like are from the middle of the country and you pick up and you move. But that in itself is like a privilege. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because a lot of people
can't do that.
They cannot do that. Mm-hmm. They have to a family to support or whatever, or they're in some sort of dire straits.
Yeah.
But like to be able to be like I can look after only myself. That's like a huge thing.
Yeah.
A lot of
people
don't have that. Anyways, go ahead.
So
you're poor.
Yeah, so I'm poor, and it is frustrating, like, to hear people say, no, you, like, especially if these are the people who are giving advice, shut up, to have gone through that, to have had day job after day job after day job to support myself, be tired pretty much for years of my life, just to have someone whose dad pays for their apartment,
right.
Either rents or buys, or they have like a credit card allowance, so they don't really have any expenses, so their rent is just like the only thing they have to worry about. For them to be like, no, you're not dedicated enough. It's like, you don't understand what dedication is if I'm doing all this stuff and still doing this thing.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. You probably get booked more than those guys anyways.
I mean, I get booked a lot, so.
Oh, flex.
did you do unemployment while you had the thing?
I didn't, and I
because you had the severance.
Because I had the severance,
and I'm telling you right now, you should have done it.
I should have done it.
You should have.
It would have allowed me to not have a job for longer. So
it's awesome.
I was in Europe, and I was like, Kenise, you are spending all your money, and you're gonna get back, and you're gonna have to be a vegetarian again. So I was like, I applied for like 4 jobs while I was over in Europe. I had my first interview while I was in Milan. Second interview while I was in Greece. I came back the day I came back. I went to an interview and I started the next Monday.
You are burning away all of the goodwill I just had for you by talking about how you applied for a job in Milan.
the Wi-Fi at this pool is so weak.
Oh, Curtis, bring me another. No, but I feel you.
Okay, no. I hear it. When you say it like that, I definitely hear it. I will say I was able to do that because I had been working for 2 years straight gotten a severance, and I don't spend very much money in my daily life because I am constantly in fear of a complete economic collapse.
Oh, yes. Mm. There you go. Ooh, yeah. That's delicious.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. No, because it happened right after I graduated college, and it was everyone's sad, everyone's destitute, there is no money anywhere, expect to be poor, etc.
Yes.
So now I'm like, at any moment, I could just be walking around, living my life, and then money as a thing just seems to disappear.
Absolutely.
Where did it go?
Yeah. How was the closest you've ever been to, like, oh, shit, I'm not sure if I'm going... I think I was down to...
Yeah, tell us your unemployment story, Mike.
I've been on unemployment once, and I was like for 2 or 3 months, and it was amazing.
Yeah,
because you don't get that much money, but it's like
how much do you, is it okay if I ask you?
Yeah,
how much
no,
you
I mean
it's same for everybody.
It's
right?
the same for everybody. It's
okay.
The maximum.
Is it?
Yeah, it's just, well, I mean, it's supposed to be like it's some X amount of the money that you had made, up to whatever. So like it's up to like $300 a week, which is like
Because it's $200 a month. Okay.
Yeah, so everyone can reach the max. I mean, not everyone. I'm sorry. So like. If you're making like 60 grand, you've already reached the max.
Got it.
You know, it's not like if you made, you know, $250,000, they're going to be giving you $10,000 a month.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like, you know, this whole thing about UBI and Andrew Yang, blah, 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 like that kind of already exists if you have unemployment because they give you about $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
it's not, and it's great because it's not enough where you can just be like sitting around smoking weed and doing stuff like that.
Ah.
But it's enough where you don't have to pay rent. I mean, it covers a lot of your rent. Most, right. I mean, even in New York, if
$1,200
it's yeah. something, yeah. right? And for me, it was enough for me to cover my rent. Of course, I still had to like figure out how to do other stuff. You're allowed to work a certain amount in unemployment, like I think it's like 10 hours a week or something like that, which I had like a some like stupid blog writing job where I worked like 5 hours a week.
Yeah.
So that was, so every week I got, you know, I got the money and I had to save it. And then I like saved it up and at the end of the month paid my rent. So that was just a huge load off.
Yeah. yeah.
Because it allowed me for a couple of months to just kind of like figure out my shit. And like, it's not fun to be on there because they bother the shit out of you. They're like, you have to go down to,
you have to take like, classes and shit, right?
You don't have to take classes, but you have to go down to like this this government building, and they teach you how to apply for a job.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I've applied in Boston because I had a period of 3 months where I wasn't working in Boston. So I applied there, and we didn't have to physically go anywhere. We had to just send them, what jobs did you apply for?
Yes, you do have to do that too.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Yeah, so you have to do. You have to like fill out, like you have to apply for X amount of
That's
kind of
nice to give you a little star for applying and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
really,
nice. That's really
yeah. yeah. And to be honest with you, I wanted to get off of unemployment just because it was so annoying. It was like, they were just like, okay, then you're going to have to come down and do this. And
yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
oh, I don't, I, like, it's like, someone, it's like if you want to get people off unemployment, just tell them you have, they have to go to the DMV every week.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I will definitely get
yeah,
off
yeah,
unemployment.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But,
yeah.
But anyways, it was just like a nice like load off.
Mm.
And you definitely should, yeah. I mean,
next
go
time
ahead,
I
do
will.
It. It'll be great.
But it's also, I quit my job and it feels,
right, yeah.
Can you do it if you quit your job?
No, you can't.
Yeah.
At least you're not supposed to.
You got fired, Mike?
Yeah, I got laid off.
Oh, this is from McCann.
This is from when I got downsized.
I was back in California.
Yeah, and like I had to do unemployment for a little bit. And it was
that's so funny.
And that's when I started comedy, baby.
Hey.
You had that time to find you and like find a job that is a fit. The last thing that you should want people to do is, okay, I lost my job. I have to take the first job that comes along, which
exactly.
you're going to may or may not be a fit. It's right. going to be bad, bad, bad. Like, that just leads to...
Right.
So, yeah, giving people a little bit of a cushion so that they can say, let me choose a job that actually is a fit for me.
Right.
That yeah. yeah, that's...
It's okay. Let me give you the owner class, the owner ownership class.
Okay.
I'm talking about, like, the social class. The owners would describe it as, I took some time off so that I could work on my skills and develop value, which I did. I went to open mics.
Yeah.
Now, I went to Bunga's Den.
Exactly. I did. I went to open mics, and that was me developing new skills
yeah.
yes.
and creating value.
Yes.
Which I did.
Which you can bring to the organization.
Which I can now bring to the organization. yeah. And now I have this thing. So that's
yeah.
like the way you got to think about
yeah,
this
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of thing.
Well, this is a great transition into the main topic I want to get into today. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Now, before we get into it, we're going to talk about Parasite, the movie. Hopefully, Anos, you've seen it. And if you haven't by now, it's probably your fault.
Yeah.
Or like,
it's been
I
out
mean,
for
we're like,
months.
We'll try not to spoil it, but like, no promises.
Dude, I want to spoil the shit out of this movie.
Okay, well, you heard Kenny, so I guess if you don't want to hear it, don't listen to it.
Fast
but,
forward.
But it's more about the theme, so I think you can still enjoy it. And before we get into it, you know, I invited you because you also have a film background. You went to film school.
Yes, I have an MFA in film production.
Wow. You have an MFA.
Yes, yeah. I have an MFA in film,
ooh, film production. So you watch a lot of like indie films and shit. You know
yes.
what's good.
I haven't as much since grad school,
yeah.
but I do watch a lot of films. I watch 100 a year.
Oh my god,
that
really?
I haven't seen. Yes, it's important to me to just. Like, I love movies. Movies
that's
are something
awesome.
That
yeah.
movies and television are things that I really like.
So,
yeah. So
before we like get into the themes of Parasite, quick summary of the movie. This is not a spoiler. It's a movie about a poor Korean family that infiltrates and intermingles with the world of a wealthy family. We've all seen it.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess should we just start with like, what do we think? Should we start there?
Sure.
I mean, we all liked it. You liked it.
I loved it.
But we don't know why. Or we can't explain to
no,
somebody
I
why.
No, I mean, well, that's one thing I was going to ask is like, okay, so for me, especially the first like half of it, it was just fun to watch.
Right.
And I was trying to think of it as like, it's fun to watch because like the sort of scheming of the family and the logic of the family. Like,
yes.
It was just like, it was like a caper. You know what I'm saying? It's like, how are they going to ingratiate themselves
right.
from this poor family into this rich family? And it was like this, like they had like this, not even that elaborate, but like a fun scheme to do it.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was just, it was, for me, fun to watch.
Yes.
And there's so many movies whether it's an artsy movie or even like even Marvel movies, a lot of times Marvel movies are not fun to watch because you're watching them and you're like, I see what's happening, but now there's a really long action sequence and like
you don't like that.
Well, I do, but but that's the thing is that like I know it's supposed to be fun, but it's like it's just like there's like so much shit on screen and you're like, what am I supposed to look
but
at?
But it's true, like Endgame, at one point there's like 70 main characters.
Yeah. I'm like, am I supposed to look at?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God. You know,
everyone
like,
has one shot where you just see and you're like, yes, that, and that.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, there's a lot of things where I know it's supposed to be fun, but it doesn't feel fun. But with like Parasite, it was like, it was fun.
It was genuinely fun.
Is there something, like what is it that a movie does to make something fun? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I was trying to figure out why it's fun.
Right. So they establish these characters, even though they are doing something that's like morally dubious. They establish the emotional connection between the characters and they provide you a reason to care about these people succeeding. I think in a lot of the Marvel films, they're like, this is this person. And based on that, you're supposed to like them.
Oh, just because they have a power?
Yeah, just because they have a power, but they're not giving you a reason to emotionally attach to these people.
They got their backstories, but you think it's too shallow?
It's shallow. It's not like...
Like, I got bit by a spider.
Yeah. So don't get me wrong, I like Spider-Man, but some of these other... Like, Thor, with the first Thor, I'm like, why do I give a shit about
any of
this?
He's just a god.
Yeah,
Thor's a god.
Yeah. Why do I care about...
He's literally immortal.
What are we talking about? This is dumb.
Yeah, what's his struggle?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I liked him.
I liked Natalie Portman, and I guess she didn't like him in the second one.
Yeah,
like
that's Thor's struggle is he couldn't get a human to fuck with him.
Yeah, that's garbage. Like, it's garbage.
That's true.
It's just the first two Thor movies were very bad, but they give you a reason to emotionally attach. It's also like they use humor in a way, so like this isn't ruining anything. There's a scene where somebody keeps peeing into like their house.
Oh yeah, that was funny.
And so like they're funny. You can relate to their struggles. You root for them, and it really does. Like it's well written, so that you attach to every character. Funny things happen to them. You see them succeed. You feel good. I love the shift that happens in the movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just like someone knocks on a door, and it's
just all of a sudden.
All of a sudden, boom! You can tell a major shift has happened,
and you could tell in that scene that something was going to happen because. Fuck it. If I'm spoiling,
but just spoil because we're just talking in code too much.
There's a scene where the family has successfully infiltrated this house.
Yes. Yeah.
And the rich family goes away.
And by infiltrated, we mean like they get jobs.
They all get jobs
as
a tutor, a housemaid.
Yeah.
And so they're all like, enjoying the house because the rich family has gone on like on a little weekend trip type thing. And they're all sitting there drinking and eating. And it's like one of those kind of like almost trope setups where. The cat's away, the mice will play, but you know the cat's going to come back.
Yeah, you know.
It's going to happen, but it's not quite how the way you think it is.
It's not even a cat. It's like a dog.
Yes, because all of a sudden, the maid that they had displaced, there was an original maid that worked for this rich family, and that maid had gotten displaced, and that maid comes back.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, wait a second. What the fuck is she
Why
doing
is she here?
Here?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's raining, and you're like, and she's acting much different than she is in the original. Like
she's beat up.
You can tell she's kind of gone through something, and you're like, oh shit, what the fuck is about to happen?
That's the first moment I think we see the consequences of their scheming.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they get other people out, like they knock out other tutors. They have the driver fired, all that. But we don't see that.
Yes,
like we know that
right.
It happens. We see them succeed, so we don't necessarily see the consequences.
Yes.
But the second she reappears and you see her face is like splotchy because she's had some serious allergic reaction.
Yeah.
It's like, oh shit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I want to talk about their family for a second. I love that family because I feel like it's not very common to see like an Asian family in that kind of way. Like,
what do you mean?
They're poor. Not only are they poor, but like they're like friends.
Yeah, they all
and
like
I really
each other.
Like that. Like they're like you know it's like for example the son is like openly talking about like, hey, I think I'm gonna ask out the girl I'm tutoring after she goes like talking about dating.
Yeah.
You know, he's like walking on his sister taking a bath. Like they're like buddies, you know? And like, I haven't seen that a lot. You know, like, you see an Asian family on whatever movie or like, even Japanese films and stuff, it's very proper, you know? It's like, that's my bad, I gotta respect him, or like, I'm hiding shit from them. But this, I don't know if it's because they were poor.
I mean, there are so few rooms in their apartment.
Yeah, that's
true. I feel like you have to, like,
you have to like
I'm gonna walk in on you, you're gonna hear about this thing anyway.
But that's what makes them so likable, because they're like a team. Right. It's like a shitty Avengers.
Yeah. I mean,
they all work together to accomplish this goal. Yeah.
It has a very like poor person's version of Ocean's 11.
Because like,
like everybody, and they have this weird like scheme going on. But to your point, at a certain point, then there's like a shift.
Yeah.
And people, you know, have asked, is it like, is it scary? And there's definitely like scary things.
Yes.
For example, so when the original maid comes back, she comes back and then she has to open a door, but she pushes on it with her whole body. And so for a second, she's kind of like horizontal.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're like, oh shit, is she a ghost? What the fuck is happening here? But like visually, you're like, it's setting you up for one thing.
Yes.
But it's, the reveal is different. And of course, the big reveal is that that maid's husband, the original maid's husband, lives in the basement of this rich person's house.
Yeah.
And he's lived there for like, it sounds
four
like,
years.
Yeah, yeah, years and years.
Yeah.
And it's like a deep basement that nobody knows about except this
bunker,
other family. It's a bunker.
Yeah.
It made sense because it wasn't just some random bunker. It was like, oh, you know, a lot of Korean architects would put a bunker in case North attacks. Or whatever,
right.
So it's all kind of justified.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then it's like, is it a horror movie? It's not a horror movie.
Yeah.
There's certain scary things. It's still kind of funny.
There's,
you know?
There's funny moments to it. Like, even when they're all, like, I think it's the mom of the family that we like has gone down with this lady and seen that this exists. And she's like, I'm going to report you.
Yeah.
And then, so the family is trying to listen and not let
her
know.
Yes.
And then suddenly they trip and fall.
Falls down.
And then she's like, oh, wait a second. This table has instantly turned.
Yeah, now
I have power over you guys. Oh, that was... It was very funny, but also like
it is.
Tense.
It's both of those.
It was great.
That kind of leads into the second thing is that. So I was watching this and I had smoked some weed. So it was like,
oh really?
Everything
Why?
For me was also I just like weed. So like everything was just kind of I was kind of taking a stride. But I had you know, my wife is Korean and she watches a lot of like K dramas and stuff like that. And in some ways, I got used to some of the twists because in K dramas, they don't give a shit about genre a lot of times.
Like okay.
They'll have explain things, what you mean by that.
So that means like you'll watch something. I was watching this one and it's about four, you know, young girls who live in a house and they're all in university students. And in general, it's like a lighthearted drama about these four girls. But every once in a while, some weird shit will happen. Where, for example, like one of the girls, she gets kidnapped by her ex-boyfriend. Right. And it suddenly becomes kind of like a scary, not murder mystery, but like scary mystery because
then
you have to go in.
But you just pitched it to me as if it was like the Korean Friends.
Yes, exactly. I mean, a lot of it is.
That's
totally, it is.
It's like if Phoebe just like died or
whatever. It's all of a sudden, exactly. It's like, oh, then Ross kidnaps, you know, Rachel and keeps her in her basement.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
And they keep the theme song the same. I'll be there.
Yeah. And the end of every one of the things is still like a, you know, like a strumming guitar. And I'm like, what? She is tied up in a basement.
Oh, yeah.
But so the whole genre breaking is like something I see a lot. But is that something I saw in this, in Parasite, was that like it was all these different movie kind of things at once.
Yes.
You know? Can you talk about that? Like, I think this actor this director is known for doing
Do you know if that's
well.
Like a Korean thing or if it's just a director thing, his flavor?
He does tend to shock you at some point in the movie where, like, you'll think this is the world that we exist in.
Yeah.
And then there will be something that happens that suddenly shifts to let you know that your perception of the world is incorrect. Where either it is like, we're introducing a new element into the story like he does in Parasite, or we're throwing into question the very... the way this world was built in like Snowpiercer.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he did that? Snow with Chris Evans?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he loves doing he loves making movies about like socioeconomic class.
Yeah.
Cuz that's also a movie about like it's basically Parasite but it's on a train. And the further up you are on a train the richer you are.
Yeah.
And I think what happened is the world is frozen and you have to keep moving.
Right. Yeah, so this train goes around the world all the time.
Right. So people in the back are poor and they're eating these like Jello cubes. It's cockroach.
They don't know it's cockroach.
And the people in the front are like
dining on like first class food.
Yeah. So it's about class and stuff. I mean, that was kind of the, I don't know, like from a. Right, this movie's, like, the commentary was about social, I mean,
the
capitalism.
The commentary is about social things, but it's also, like, if you remember at the end of that movie, it's the guy who was in the back coordinates with the guy who's in the front about when we're going to have wars and when we're going to have these things to, like, lower the population.
Oh, that's right, Snowpiercer!
Yes. Where the population, oh, shit, I'm sorry.
Have you seen it?
It's okay.
wait, explain to him. This is crazy.
Okay, so.
Did he write this movie? It's fucking insane.
It's a crazy movie, and it's, like, also visually, like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But they have it so that there's, again, different segments of this train represent different classes, and you can. What you have access to is dependent on which train you're in.
Right.
So in the back train, they're like, we're gonna go and we're gonna like it's something like if it feels very like organic, like there starts to be whispers and we're gonna go take over the front part and we're gonna have this war and we're gonna claim our place in this. And so the whole story at first seems like, okay, we're getting together, we're gonna do this, we're fighting, people are dying as they're moving up the thing, but you get to the front and you realize that he has, like, the guy who's at the front, the one who has the most power, the one that they've been like, we gotta kill this guy, he has a phone, it connects directly to the back of the train, and they say, okay, this is when we're gonna be having a war, we need this many people, fewer people on this train, so let's have them come through. Some people get killed here, some people get killed.
So they coordinated the war. Yeah. So every revolution that the poor people think is their own idea, it's been calculated just to show the power dynamic. Yeah. It's like, oh, you think you control anything back there? It's
nothing.
All under our calculation.
Yeah. Damn.
Yeah. So I mean, Parasite was. I guess it was kind of like that. I don't know. It's like there's like this whole argument of like who is the parasite, you know, in the movie. Is it the Kims or the weird people in the front or in the
or
basement?
The
Parks, the rich people who, you know, are a slave to like the manual labor of the blue collar people.
Right. Yeah. But you had an interesting thing where you mentioned before we started recording that like really the rich family is oblivious to all of the stuff that's happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until the very end.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Until the very, very end.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really a war between all the people who don't have anything.
Yes.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. So I was watching an interview with this Bong Han or whatever his name is. Bong Joon-ho. And obviously it's about class and stuff and there are rich people, but the sad part is that poor people fight with other poor people for money.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
And I see that in real life. I see that in life. Like, on my street, there's a Korean deli, and across the street is a new deli run by, like, Arab dudes.
Yeah.
And the Korean one's called Blueberry, and the other one is called, like, Wholesome Foods or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're, like, they're constantly having a price war over their salads and sandwiches because they want to run each other out of business.
Right.
But after seeing this movie, I'm like, dude, when you guys are doing this, like, both immigrant families running their business, obviously I want to support both of them, but it's like, you think Whole Foods gives a fuck about what you guys... You think fucking, you know, all these big chains like Trader Joe's, like, they're laughing at you guys.
Yeah.
They're laughing at you guys because they don't give a fuck, you know? And I think that's the thing with Parasite is, like, they could have got, like, the people in the bunker and the park or the Kims, they could have maybe collaborated and really taken over the parks, but they just can't do it because that's the...
They need to...
That's the plight of the poor class, I guess. Yeah. You just can't
understand
that.
They need to maintain...
That.
Like, they... I don't think they realize the power, that they have, that they could, if they wanted to, put the Kims into the bunker and then just enjoy this house and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, no one would know where to look for them. I mean, the police would come and be like, who are you guys? And it's like, oh, they told us to look at their house. I'm the maid, they could do something that drastic.
But doesn't even cross their mind.
It doesn't even, it's like, no, we just need to keep this
keep
so we
jobs.
Can keep, this
keep this
lie going,
going
that we want. And to me, the frustrating thing is, and they kind of talked about this at the end, like, at the beginning, you see that it's not like any of these people aren't smart. Like,
the
son, he, like, the rich kid who gives him this tutor job, this he's like, oh, you're smarter than me. You're like able to do this, but he just doesn't have access to go to college.
Right, right.
The daughter is able to like quickly forge documents that look
real.
And they're like, oh my gosh, you could have been a this. And it's like, these people all could be something if they only had access to capital, but if they're just going to stay in the place that they are because they don't have access to capital.
The
okay, I have like a couple themes I want to discuss that I thought was interesting. One of the things I picked up on was, you know, they're constantly like clashing like the rich and the poor lifestyles just to like show you, just rub in your face how different it is. So the marriage between the rich family and the poor family, I thought was interesting. It almost feels like the marriage in the rich family was like not based in love at all.
Right.
And one scene that really got to me was when Mr. Kim infiltrates as a driver and Mrs. Kim infiltrates as a maid.
Right.
They're working in the same room, and while the Parks, the rich family is called the Parks, while they're not looking, he grabs her ass.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, honey, we made it. He grabs her ass, right? That's funny. That's like a thing that a husband should do to a wife every once in a while, right?
And you loving thing.
And you contrast that with the way the Parks show affection, which is like this, they're on the couch and he like forcibly, like, he like fingers her in that thing, you know? It doesn't even look, it looks forced, and also like, we don't even know if she's enjoying it. It's like, is this love? You know, and like multiple times the theme of love comes up and then the husband doesn't have a clear answer whether it's to like he loves his wife or not.
Yeah.
He's like, all he has to say is like she's a bad cook and she can't do housework.
Yeah.
So he only has bad things to say about her. And it kind of raises the question of like,
and this is the moment where they really reinforce the class lines each time the dad, the driver, Mr. Kim does this. But he's like, yes, but you love her. Like, the Mr. Park will be like, oh, yeah, he'll be complaining about her. And then he's like genuinely trying to help. Mr. Kim is like, because he is coming from this place of love. Like, he loves his wife so much.
Right, right, right.
But then every time, that's the moment when you bring up like that they don't have love. That's the moment where he's like, okay, you're my driver and you should stop.
That's crossing
talking,
the line, right?
You can comment on other things, but you can't comment on the love I theoretically don't have for my wife.
Do you think when you get rich, you lose love? Is that the lesson there? Like, when it just everything just becomes so transactional in business, you know?
I don't know.
In this world.
Because to me, the two poor couples had more love in the movie. Even the basement people, they had more real love.
If
more
you
family.
Think that wife, Miss Park, would work in a house for 4 years just to make sure her husband could hide from debtors.
Yeah, yeah,
she
right,
would have
yeah,
left
right.
him ages ago.
Yeah,
she would have been I'm sorry, you're done. This is, no.
Yeah. Oh, so in a way, she's a parasite too.
Because she is like, I just am pretty and I sit around and I'm so worried that he's going to be mad. He can't see any flaws.
Right.
Like, there is
like sort of, the way the rich family has to keep up certain pretenses.
Yeah.
They have to do a certain thing. I mean, you can't say that the father doesn't love the children because when the son gets sick, he like rushes off to try to, take the kid to the hospital, which kind of leads to the big final thing. There is like, there is some love happening in this family.
Yeah.
But just the way that it's portrayed, again, it's a little bit more about, you know, it's a lot about what does each family know about the world, right? So the the rich family is only kind of concerned about, you know, parties and like they're worrying about themselves, right? Yeah. Whereas the poorer family, the poorer the family is, the more knowledge they have about the whole situation.
I mean, they can't keep this. This is a bit literal, but they cannot keep the world out. So like the Kims live in a basement. There's a night when it floods.
Yes.
Sewage is coming into their house. Like they have to deal with all of the shit.
Literally,
shit. They have to deal with all of that.
Yeah.
But the Parks live in this like pristine little island unto themselves that they get to control everything about.
Controlled.
So like trees line their backyard, so they don't even have to see the rest of the city.
Yeah.
They get to just control it so much.
Yeah. Right.
They don't have to. That's
there's the whole thing where the lights come on by itself because there's a guy in the basement. The guy in the basement is turning it on and off, and they just assume
that it's censored.
That it's just censored
because it's a big house.
They think that it's like you know, oh man.
Here's a couple interesting themes. I don't know if you guys picked up on the theme of Native Americans. Apparently, that was a homage to like the original Parasite, which were the Pilgrims.
Oh,
when they came to America.
They
came to a house that was already taken and took it over.
Yeah.
And then another thing that was really interesting is that the ending theme song. Apparently, the director wrote the lyrics, and apparently, he's describing all the work he's doing, all the work the son is doing to make money to buy that house, which is like what he's daydreaming about.
Yeah, that's his daydream.
But the song was originally was originally called 574 Years because the director did the math, and for somebody in that socioeconomic class to make X amount of money to buy the house, it would take you 500 years to do it. Meaning, not his his kids won't get it, his grandkids won't get it, his grand grandkids won't get it either.
No
right?
one in living like. Yeah, that's
he's never gonna get like
never.
So it just goes to show like once you're in this class, you can play the games, you could be a parasite for a little bit, but like at the end of the day, you're never gonna really
live
in that house, you know.
Ugh.
And that's how I feel when I do comedy with rich kids.
Yeah.
So get that unemployment check.
Okay, I will get that unemployment
check. We need that money.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This race news for today is not really a race news. Well, it is race news in that we are bitter about it. this article reads 11 Asian American comics who killed it this year and need to be on your 2020 radar. And you know, they list 11 comedians who are killing it this year. And Mike and I read this article, and we're not in it. We're not in it at all.
I think we killed it this year too.
I really think we did great.
I am a fan of you guys. Aww. I will say all of the people who are on that list have TV deals.
TV deals.
They either were employed, like, or their employment changed to be more public facing. But you guys got to get on TV. I think because this is where they pull their information from.
So what I was joking around with Fumi before was one of the comics is Aparna Nancherla.
Yeah.
Right. And you don't have it's like it needs to be on your 2020 radar. That's what this thing says. Aparna been on the radar.
Yes.
She been on the radar.
Yeah.
We see, you know, we've been detected.
Yeah.
She has a Netflix special. She's been on Late Show with Colbert. She's been on Conan. She's on several television shows.
That's like, why I was like, can we just have her slot?
She was
like,
in the movie.
I like to think that we were.
Favorite. Oh, Shang's on here.
I know Shang's on here. I mean, he's also been on.
About
I don't
time.
Know. I feel like let's go through each people. Like let's go through each. Aparna and Shaila. Okay, she's great.
She's
but like, I don't know why she's on this. Like, gotta check her out. She's new. List. She's not new. Bon Yang, reasonable.
He did have a good breakout.
They put him in like as many sketches as possible on SNL. They're
pushing hard.
People love him.
He was on this amazing podcast called Asian Not
He
Asian.
Was, and he yes. killed it.
And he was so funny. Check it out.
That was the beginning of it.
That was real. You know, you think about it. It was kind of
the thing. He did the pod, and then SNL announced him next week. So I'm just saying.
I'm not saying we did it.
Conversations before. Even though he had been working at SNL before this, that was not what made it happen.
Whatever. Technicality.
Okay, then we have Sherry Cola. I don't know who this is.
I don't know who this is, but
she opened for Ronnie.
Oh, she opened for Ronnie.
Yeah, but she opened for him during on his Netflix tape.
Oh,
so,
you know,
different kind of. I'm in the basement of opening.
Okay,
The parasite basement of opening, and she's on the first floor. Okay, Joel Kim Booster. Hey, well deserved, hot guy.
Yeah,
He's on TV.
Yeah, he had Sunny Side. Unfortunately,
Chang Wang.
But.
I mean, he's been on my radar.
Yeah,
he's dope.
Okay, Karen Chi.
Yeah,
I fuck with that.
Yeah,
I fuck with Karen Chi.
She's great.
Friend of the show. Yep, she got the job at the late night with Seth Meyers after she did her podcast. So who knows? I'm not saying it's related.
Yeah.
But
wait,
Asian
it was
Not
after. How long has she been? I thought she'd been at late night with Seth Meyers for a while.
It was after Asian Not Asian.
Oh really?
It really was. She was one of her first guests. She was very new.
Ah.
Eugene Cordero. I don't know who this is.
He is on The Good Place.
Oh okay. Hey, I can't shit on that.
Yeah, The Good Place
well
is
deserved.
A great show.
Yeah.
Patty Harrison. I don't really know her comedy.
I know internet. I know she's.
I know internet. I know internet.
I know internet. No, she. I follow her on Twitter. I think she's funny.
Oh, she's
on Twitter.
So funny on Twitter.
But she also had a podcast with Lorelai Ramirez, like A Woman's Smile. She's in Shrill. She has like a lot of like small those parts and a lot of.
But she's had the buzz around her. I've heard her name a
for
lot.
Sure.
And then finally, we have Karen Diol. She's been on Sunnyside.
Okay, I don't know who that is. Okay, and also then, Sunnyside. Then
Jimmy O. Yang? Mike? Jimmy O. Yang?
What? Okay, I don't
know. What is he doing here?
What? We dislike him?
No.
No, I just this is supposed to be like a... Am I wrong? Isn't it supposed to be like a... You gotta watch out for that. You gotta watch out for these guys, right?
Yeah.
Needs to be on your radar.
I think okay.
That's like top five black comedians you gotta watch out for this year. Dave Chappelle. Chris Rock.
Chris Rock.
Cedric the Entertainer. Like, what the fuck? The legends? Like...
That's so funny.
Anyways, Jimmy Yang took her spot. And then Maya Erskine, well-deserved. Love her show.
Pin 15 was fantastic.
Pin 15, yes. Amazing, amazing.
I'd like to think that we would be, if this list went out to 100, we would be there.
You're
in
like
one
70.
Of
their, yeah, 70
would
have to be. They'd run out. They start just naming Asian people. They just meet on the street, like that guy with the North
gosh.
Face jacket,
Brian Wang. Yeah,
yeah, my friend from college.
So funny. This guy works at my IT department.
You guys don't think Christ. You guys are going to be on the 2021 list?
You think so, Mike?
2021.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's just a year from now.
We that should be a goal. Should that be our New Year's resolution? Get on some kind of list.
Yeah.
This is why I wanted to work with you on we have a pilot like script and we have some other like samples and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
but I wanted
to
get another one because I feel like we just need like a lot of stuff with comedy is just somebody says you're funny and then everybody else goes you're funny. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like when I wish that's why okay. If I going back to the whole like comedy belts thing.
Yeah.
I got my blue belt because I did the knit.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And when I did the knit,
remind me how high blue is.
Well, in this scenario,
was this before we started recording?
I don't think our listeners heard about that.
Yeah,
can you go over your karate analogy real quick?
Yes.
Because this was before we started recording.
Okay. So yes, this is before. Okay. So I feel sometimes with. You know, with comedy, it's like, it's not a skit. It's not something you can see. We're not like making something you can see a lot of times. Well, I mean, I guess there's films and stuff. But, you know, with stand-up comedy, you can't tell somebody's funny by looking at them.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
or if you're supposed to respect them.
You don't know if you're supposed to respect them. And I learned this like a long time ago. Like, I would see somebody, oh, maybe that person's not going to be funny. And they go up there and they crush it and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, a lot of times, people like... underestimate me because I don't look poor.
What?
They think,
it's because you don't look poor that they're underestimating
for a long time. I think that people were just like, oh, you gotta be like a disheveled looking white dude.
I was like, I think it's the white dude part versus
I think it's the race. I think it's because you're Asian.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, maybe that too.
Yeah.
So and then I would have to go up there and like, you know, and do my thing and they go, oh, you're funny. Okay, fine.
Okay, they cannot see your hands on this podcast.
I'm doing a karate motion.
Okay, I was like, this is not clear.
This is my impression of Mike on stage.
Okay.
My wife is Korean. Look at my sneakers.
Such a silly noise. Okay.
I feel like with comedy, you need to have like a belt system that we can all wear belts.
Yeah.
Right, I'm big into belts.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just like karate belts.
Yeah.
And it goes from you know white to yellow, orange, green, blue, purple, brown, black, whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and those like there's different stripes you can get, and then you can tell if somebody is going to be oh that person deserves a certain amount of respect. A lot of it has to do with time because and that's why we always ask each other how long you've been doing comedy.
Yeah.
Because if somebody says I've been doing comedy for like 8 years, then you're like okay you're like closer along to becoming a black, but maybe you're like a brown belt or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
We assume, but some of these people who have been in there 8 years.
Absolutely.
Sometimes
you meet someone who's only been doing it for 4 years and they're very funny.
Yes.
And that, so you can't really tell, but that's like the closest thing we have.
Yeah.
So I feel like we all need to have some sort of system. We need to sit down, convene some sort of comedy council.
Yes.
Where we can sit around.
Happen.
And the term, yes, never happen. It'll just become just a bunch of people doing cocaine.
Yeah.
Right.
But we'll like determine who is going to be on what like thing. A lot of these people on this 2020 list, 2019-20 list, already kind of like brown belts or so.
Oh, black belt, dude.
Because they
Aparna black belt.
She's a crazy
she's
a third black
level black belt.
Yeah, she like
Jimmy O. Yang, third level black belt.
They invented their own style, you know?
Yeah.
So
what's a part of style.
Oh,
kind of quirky.
Yeah, quirky.
That's funny.
Like quirky minority.
Insecure yeah. Park Slope lawyer.
Yeah,
who's, yeah. yeah. But like not the quirky that like Zooey Deschanel. Like nah. I'm so quirky. Don't you want to fuck me? But it's like I'm a genuinely quirky person.
I'm definitely quirky. I have a lot of anxiety.
Yeah. So, I love that
anxiety foo, as I call it.
I love that.
So I think you know what the fuck were we talking about? Oh,
the belt system.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we should be able to get onto a list of
a list.
Some kind.
Yes. Yeah, some kind.
But I think that, oh, yes, this is what I remember. We need to get a credit on something so that people think
see
we are a
belt.
Big deal.
Right, the credit yes. is the belt.
That's really what it is.
So you get the credit, and then because you got that credit, you get like a blue belt. I don't know what these things are. I don't know the levels of belt, but I cannot stand when I go to another comedy city and because like I'm not like I don't have a Netflix special, yeah. they're just like, who are you, somebody's girlfriend?
Yeah.
I would love to have a belt. I would love to have a belt to be like, actually, no, I'm better than most of the people in this podunk ass town. don't ever in your fucking life. You know what I mean? Like that's what I mean, I'm not like conceited, but I have done things and it is so annoying
yeah.
to have some open micer who's like 6 months in yeah, trying to yeah, tell me what's yeah, what. Yeah, and yeah, I'm yeah, like, yeah, yeah. you just don't know who I am. You know, okay.
Do
that doesn't mean
I
that
am?
I don't so do stuff.
Look at us poor comedians fighting
yes,
each other.
Yes, right. We should be going after Kevin Hart right now. We're coming for you, Kevin.
All right, let's wrap this up. Kenise, thank you so much for being on the pod.
Thank
Is
you.
There anything you'd like to plug?
Yes, I am going to be headlining Caroline's on January 21st. Fumi Ooh. Is actually going to be on the show.
I'm featuring, or I'm something. I'm
You're
doing
featuring.
Something. I'm featuring.
Yeah.
Does that mean I'm doing 20 minutes?
Woo. You're doing 15 minutes.
Oh, guys, long set.
Whoa.
We talked about doing half hours once. We should do
yes,
that at some point.
Yes, I still think we should. Yes. I mean, you're going to do 15 and I'm going to do 45.
Hell yeah, hell
so
yeah.
it's like,
hell
the
yeah.
same amount of time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where can people get tickets?
They can get tickets on the Caroline's website, and I think the code for you to get cheaper tickets is SWEET, just the word SWEET.
Okay. Social media?
It is Kenise Mobley on all the platforms. Follow me. Please like my tweets. No one does. It's really embarrassing. Thank you.
You can also find us on there at Asian Not Asian Pod on Instagram, and I'm on there at the Fumi Abe. That's THEFUMIABE. Also on Twitter, same name.
You can find me on Instagram at Nice Pants Bro.
And the next Hack City Comedy Show, the monthly stand-up show that Mike and I host together and produce together, is going to be January 15th. Tickets are available online. Just Google Eventbrite Hack City or go to our Instagram bio link. It's $10. All new comedians. 8 o'clock, Canal Street Market, January 15th.
Or February 19th. If you're listening to this a little bit late.
Oh
February
yeah, yeah,
19th,
yeah.
2020.
Yes.
Assuming that we're still around in the future because of World War III, that's about to happen.
Yes.
But yeah, come check that out. If you're not an irradiated mutant.
Hell yeah. Okay, I think that's it. Kenise, thank you so much for doing the
thank
show.
Thank you.
And we'll see everybody next week. Bye.
Bye.
This episode of Asian Not Asian is presented in partnership with Listening Party. Follow the crew on Instagram at Listening Party Presents and at Canal Street Market.